Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's a New Hampshire rite of spring. Bears emerging from their dens, hungry, looking for food, and sometimes encountering humans. And this year, we might see many of these encounters. As the state's growing bear population finds less of its natural diet, these creatures will forage through our backyards and trash bins instead. But hungry though the bears might be, the state's Fish and Game Department says don't allow them to eat anything on your property as the agency engages in its own rite of spring, reminding everyone to bring in their bird feeders, secure their chicken coops, and properly close their garbage cans. Today in The Exchange, a tough spring for New Hampshire's bears, what to expect, and how to react. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests today are all from New Hampshire's Fish and Game Department. They are Glenn Normando, he's the Executive Director, and Director Normando, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Nice to see you, Laura.
Also with us, Christine Rhines, she's a wildlife biologist and moose project leader at Fish and Game. And Chris Rhines, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you. Thanks. Nice to be here.
And also with us, Andrew Timmons, wildlife biologist and bear project leader. And Andy Timmons, nice to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Morning. Happy to be here.
I also want to let everybody know that throughout our show, we will hear excerpts from our interview earlier this week with Ben Killam. He's a licensed bear rehabilitator for Fish and Game and founder of the Killam Bear Center in Lyme. So we'll be hearing from him about his experience rehabilitating bear cubs. Director Normando, I've been reading a lot about this confluence of events, the perfect storm that's come together to make this an especially hard spring for bears. What's going on?
Well, we had several years of great mast crops.
Mast is acorns, right?
Acorns, beech nuts, hickories. These are primary food sources for most wild critters. And as people should realize, birth rates in wild critters go up and down based on, in a lot of cases, food availability. So when critters are well fed, they reproduce lots more critters. And then when there's a crash in the food supply, as happens in nature, it is problematic. The biggest example of that was the squirrel Armageddon that occurred on our highways in the fall. These are animals that are trying to fatten up for the winter. They was just an overpopulation of squirrels, and they're running around everywhere looking for food. And unfortunately, a lot of car interaction. And that can be extrapolated to the situation with bears, deer, and other animals that have a high dependency on nut crops.
So fat mama bears 2 years ago, Director Normando, 2017, gave birth to more cubs than they would normally give birth to. And then once those cubs are out on their own, about 18 months in, they're hungry, they're looking for food, and there's just not enough? Is that what's going on?
Essentially, and the animals are, bears. I mean, bears' primary mission in life during the summer and fall is to get fat so that they can live, survive through hibernation. And so that's what bears do.
And just like the squirrels, Chris, it sounds like the bears, given what Director Normando tells us, is not as much nuts and so forth, acorns in the woods, they're having to go further afield looking for food, sometimes in our backyards.
Well, that's true. But really, this is a proverbial problem. So bears are very smart. They'll make use of all food sources. So if we provide the food, they're not stupid, and they will be more than happy to accept our offerings, whether it's poorly taken care of garbage or bird feeders that we haven't put away or free-ranging chickens. That's just like free-ranging chicken McNuggets for bears. So, yeah, they're going to, regardless of how many bears there are, once they've learned that we would provide them with food, they'll make use of that food. And right now we do have a relatively high bear population, but we also have a dramatically increasing human population. So, you know, those two things are interacting on a much more regular basis.
So a higher bear population, about 5,800 bears, and hungrier than they might normally be. So really looking for those free handouts, so to speak. Right. At least that's how they see our chicken coops in our backyards.
Yes.
How hard is it to educate people about the need to bring in the chicken coop, close up the trash bin, and so forth?
It is quite difficult. One of the difficulties is that we do have a lot of people that come up here to vacation and stay in campgrounds or, they stay in townhouses and they're not here very often. They don't see, well, what's the big deal if I just leave the garbage outside instead of putting it in the, you know, bear-proof receptacle? And so it's a constant fight that we have. And there are a lot of people who come here and think, well, I'm just going to let my chickens run and run free. And of course, if you do, they're fair game to many different predators. And bears also like the food that we feed chickens. And so whether it's beehives or chickens or garbage, you need to take proper care of those things and protect it from wildlife by putting up electric fencing and taking care of your garbage.
It's so interesting that you talk about people who come to visit, and we love tourists, obviously, but on our website today, nhpr.org/exchange, there's a great map of where some of the real problem spots are. You can click around. You can see where in the state garbage is the biggest problem, where in the state beehives or chicken coops are the biggest problem. And two of the hot spots, Chris, that I saw when I was looking at it yesterday were the White Mountains and the Lakes region.
Yes.
So there you go. Folks coming in from Connecticut or Massachusetts not really understanding how important it is.
Right.
To
And they're shocked when they see a bear. They're like, do you realize there are a bear here? We do know.
Well, I live near downtown Concord, and I've seen them in my neighborhood, so
yes.
I'm no longer shocked. What are you seeing out there in the woods, Andy Timmons? You're our bear expert.
Yeah. So this spring, spring is always a lean time for bears. The only foods available typically in spring are the early greens, so green vegetation, as well as newly emerging buds on trees, those type of things. An important spring food for bears is also leftover hard mast from the fall before. So it's very normal. If we had a good acorn crop last fall, it would be very normal for bears to be on those same ridges this time of year feeding on acorns left over. Those nuts are palatable about to the time where they start to sprout, which is usually in June. So May would be a month where bears would be using leftover hard mast.
So this is the time of year where they like to pull out the leftovers from the back of the fridge, so to speak. They're still good.
Right, right. But because of that mast was so lacking last fall, that's not available to them now. So the only thing right now that bears have to eat is greens. And although we're seeing some green up, it's coming slow. We've had plenty of moisture. We now need several days of good, warm sun to really get things growing good, particularly up north. It's very surprising to me how green things look downstate here, but up north it's still very much a pretty bland landscape.
So what is typically happening at this time of year, Andy, in a bear's life cycle in terms of cubs and mating and juveniles leaving the den and so forth?
Right. So all bears right now are trying to restock on the body fat that they lost during the denning period. You know, all bears basically sustain themselves on accumulated fat. Sows, a percentage of the sows in the population have newborn cubs with them right now. So those add an additional nutritional demands on those animals. So bears have left hibernation. Their body weights have been depleted by 30 to even 50%, and they're trying to regain that back. So in a bear's mind right now, it's how to find high-quality food to start accumulating fat. The problem with green vegetation is it doesn't really build body fat. So it's a filler, but we're really waiting for the higher-quality summer foods to become available, particularly some of our berry crops. So it's that critical period where bears are hungry, they're looking for high-quality food. That high-quality food is somewhat limited on the landscape, so it's a period of time where bears can easily be attracted to high-quality human food.
And so everyone's seeking food, but especially sows, to bring it back to young cubs in the den?
Yeah, you know, because those cubs are reliant on her milk, so she's... You know, she has to produce. She has to support their growth as well as her own.
Her own caloric.
You know,
intake.
So these females with newborn cubs have the highest nutritional strain on them at the moment.
So, what about the juveniles, the 18-month-olds, basically the teenagers who are being kicked out of the house?
They're still with mom right now, but they'll be getting kicked out here pretty soon in the next coming month, and which coincides with the time that the breeding season begins. So, at 18 months of age, the sow. Kicks her yearling offspring away, and that can be a pretty dramatic event for them. And she's getting ready to come into estrus and breed. And what she'll do is she will allow her female offspring to occupy part of her home range. She won't necessarily spend time with them, but she'll allow them to exist within her home range. But her male offspring will be driven far and wide, which is why yearling male bears are some of the bears on the landscape that tend to find themselves in high conflict situations because they're like teenage boys. They're not thinking straight, and they're being pushed around.
Again, today in The Exchange, we are looking at new approaches toward an old problem, spring encounters between humans and hungry bears. And as we're hearing, it's been a tough spring for New Hampshire's bears. After a couple years of abundant food, bears this year are emerging from dens, skinny, hungry, having to forage farther afield, including in our own backyards. We're looking at the impact of these lean times on bear behavior and how some Granite State communities are reacting to it. And we'd love to hear from you. What have you noticed when it comes to bear behavior this spring? What questions do you have about bear habits? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, Robert sent us an email in Epsom. He says, Monday night, we were visited by a tiptoe through the tulips stealth bear who didn't mind using the motion detector spotlight to fine-tune its operation of tipping the hanging sunflower seed dish just enough to get every last seed and unhooking an S-hook to carry off the suet cage full of suet. None of the hanging apparatus was disturbed. This was 20 feet from our living room windows while we watched a movie. I went out after the movie rather than before to bring it in so this wouldn't happen, but we'll have to do it as soon as it gets dark from now on. Chris Rhines, I'm guessing you'd say to Robert, don't wait till it gets dark. Take it out April 1st.
Yes, don't. A lot of people have the misconception that bears only feed at night. But they'll rapidly learn that, oh, well, they're taking them in at night. I'll just show up in the day. So take your feeders down and do not put them back up. If you want to see birds, put out bird baths or put out, fur from your dog so they can build nests with that. But please don't feed the birds anymore. They are fine without the food.
Well, Director Normando, I've heard from people that they leave their bird feeders out all year because they feel like humans have hurt bird migration patterns with all the building that we've done, that we've paved over the woods where they used to feed on berries or whatever. And so I've heard from, lots of people, I don't want to take my bird feeders in. The birds are hurting.
I understand that. And certainly a lot of people like to watch birds also. But I mean, you have to look at what are we doing here, and the real issue comes down to we're not only creating an attractant for these bears, but we're also creating a situation where these bears can become used to people to the point where they're not afraid of people, where they can become, a real problem, and we're trying to avoid that as much as possible at the department and try to educate people, because when bears aren't afraid of people anymore and they're living basically solely on human-provided foods, they can become a really big nuisance and possibly even a hazard. And we try to avoid reaching that that point. And I do want to add also that people should realize this is not a New Hampshire problem. This is a nationwide issue. Okay, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Jersey, for example, that people think are highly developed, have huge black bear problems.
New Jersey, really?
New Jersey is is practically the ground zero for major bear issues. So, this is a problem that we're grappling with, or that wildlife agencies are grappling with around the country, and it's really prevalent here in the Northeast, which is just trying to get these expanding populations of people to understand that they need to learn how to live with these animals in a way that doesn't ultimately cause them to develop behaviors that are problematic.
Well, and you used the word nuisance, so I'll ask you, what is, Director Normando, a so-called nuisance bear? And I say so-called because I know a lot of people object to that term.
Well, you know, when they start breaking into houses and garages, generally causing mayhem in the neighborhood or in densely populated areas, that's when issues occur.
And what happens to nuisance bears?
Well, a variety of things. Obviously, we try to avoid actually euthanizing bears as much as possible. But, there's only so many bears you can move around the state to other places. So it's just a problem. And it's a problem that gets created by people who aren't taking care with all of these things you can do to avoid attracting the bears in.
I want to ask you also, Andy, about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, the reality of it is the public can deteriorate bear behavior pretty quickly by allowing bears access to these human-related foods. And, bears are about calories. And if they're getting high-quality food in people's yards, that becomes the norm for them. The issue then becomes suddenly when this bear's behavior gets to a point where people are no longer happy with it, it becomes our responsibility as an agency to deal with that. So we're forced to make some difficult decisions based on animals that we had no responsibility in creating that negative behavior. So, the decisions become, do you move a bear? Do you destroy a bear? What do you do? And, they're not easy decisions to make. We do move a few bears, but it's not the answer. We use relocation about 1% of our annual bear complaints.
Wow, that's not a lot.
No. So on an average year of 600 to 700 bear complaints, we might move 6 or 7 bears. And there's some thought process that goes into which bears get moved and which don't. But the only way we're going to beat this is by changing human behavior, making people more responsible, making people recognize that if they live in New Hampshire, they live in bear country, and they just need to be proactive.
I wonder, we'll talk about that after a break, people who live in New Hampshire, but also how you might suggest, Andy, that we deal with the tourism problem. People who live here maybe hear the messaging and after a while start to get it, but then you've got all these people cycling in and out for the weekend or for the week. A little harder maybe to get to those folks. So we'll talk about that after a short break and take a lot more of your emails. You can send us your thoughts and questions about bear behavior that you have noticed this spring, or just basic questions about bears in the Granite State. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Thank you.
The main reason I decided to incorporate NHPR into my estate planning is because it absolutely is an essential part of my day.
Robert Cody of Deerfield.
Doing so with an IRA account is a very tax-efficient way of transferring your assets to the future.
Fund the future of NHPR by naming us as a beneficiary to your IRA. Learn more about this and other plan giving options at nhpr.giveplans.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, bears in the Granite State. It's been a lean spring for bears this year, and because of that, there may be more human-bear encounters than usual. Let's hear from you. What have you seen when it comes to bear behavior this spring? What questions or observations do you have about bear habits, especially, again, during this time of less than abundant natural food for bears? Send us an email with your thoughts and questions, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. All of our guests are from New Hampshire's Fish and Game Department. They are Executive Director Glenn Normando, wildlife biologist and bear project leader Andrew Timmons, and wildlife biologist and moose project leader Christine Rhines. And a little bit later, we'll also hear from Ben Killam. He's a licensed bear rehabilitator for Fish and Game and founder of the Killam Bear Center in Lyme. And just before the break, all of you, we were talking about this very important issue that you guys put out every spring, telling people, bring in the feeders, secure the trash, secure the chickens. And Chris Rhines talked about how that's a difficult message to extend to the general public, but especially tourists who are just here for a week or a weekend. So, Andy Timmons, I wonder how you reach that group of people.
Yeah, it's it's no surprise that, you know, earlier on the show you talked about hotspots. Those hotspots are always where human densities are the highest, which tends to be the lakes regions and the White Mountains. You know, the tourist community is a challenge at times because they don't have the experience of living with bears, and they're not here long enough to suffer the consequences of often poor decisions they make. So we're trying to do a better job to get our messaging at welcome centers, any type of place where visitors are apt to stop. We recently, this past winter, formulated a working team at Fish and Game where we're trying to revamp our messaging. We recognize that our Something's Brewing with Bear campaign has been around since the mid-90s and perhaps becoming white noise for some folks. So we're really trying to revamp our messaging, and part of that whole process is recognizing that we need to do a better job to try to reach visitors of this state, and we're working in that regard.
One more question about visitors, Chris, and then I do want to go to our listeners. Lots of calls and emails coming in. What about the idea that some visitors might like to see bears? I remember going to Yellowstone a couple years ago, and the rangers really got frustrated when people would actually try to entice bears, antelope, even buffalo to come close so they could get a really awesome picture. I wonder if that's a problem with visitors here in New Hampshire.
It is for not just visitors, but we do have residents that also like bears and like to feed them and like to have them come close. And so that's a case-by-case basis, and we try to address that and explain to people that they are setting that bear up for future difficulties with people, and they need to leave them alone and let them find wild food and make sure that you don't allow them to gain access to your food. It is unfortunately a human trait that we want to reach out and touch other species, but it's not good for those other species in most cases.
Well, and in an era where everybody likes to share cool pictures on social media, and, you know, guilty is charged. If I see something beautiful, I'm going to post it. So is it too tempting now, Chris, to just want to get that great picture and put it on Instagram?
Oh, certainly it's too tempting for a lot of people. But the nice thing about bears is that a lot of people do have an innate respect for them. So that's helpful as far as keeping people away from them. But yeah, it's hard to keep your distance. These are wild animals. They're not teddy bears.
And as you guys always say, a fed bear is a dead bear because it gets too habituated to humans and then
creates more issues. Yeah.
Let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Darton is calling from Bow. Hi, Darton. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. So I have a little guilt because last year a very tiny black bear meandered into our yard, backyard, laid down by a tree, took a nap. No common sense in what was just said, you know, stay away. And then eventually, I tried, it was a weekend, I tried calling the State Department, everyone was closed. Eventually kind of meandered off, and, there's no way, it was so young that I think it would make it on its own. But again, knowing that you should stay away and keep clear, I did, but I just felt guilty about it. And what was the right thing to do?
When you saw that little cub in your backyard?
Yeah.
And how many times did you see it, Darton?
It was, it came just one time. It came through the woods. You know, like I said, laid down at the base of a tree, took a little nap, kind of meandered around the yard, and then went down the hill to our neighbors. So just that one time.
Well, and leaving it alone, Director Normandeau, was probably the right thing to do. So maybe Darton doesn't need to feel guilty.
It probably was the right thing to do. And I'll pass that to Andy to further elaborate.
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't feel guilty. Leaving the bear by itself is generally the right approach. Had it been a bear that had been hanging out for days on end and was clearly suffering, then it might be time to call the agency for some advice. But a one-time sighting, a bear that comes through your property, you did the right thing. You know, these animals have, they're not all going to make it. That bear may have survived. It may have not been in terrible shape. But that is the right thing to do, particularly on the periodic sighting.
Well, and speaking of bear cubs, our producer Jessica Hunt went up to Lyme this week to speak with Ben Killam. He's a licensed bear rehabilitator for Fish and Game and founder of the Killam Bear Center in Lyme. And Ben Killam told Jessica he has been really busy at his facility this year. Given the sudden increase in abandoned cubs, Killam said he's taken on more orphan cubs than he thought he could handle, but he did find that the bears adapted pretty well.
In my study of bear behavior, I found that they were social animals, and they really are. And these cubs would come in initially, they'd be afraid of the other bears, and there'd be a little verbal exchange. But within a week, they're wrestling together, and 2 weeks, they're sleeping together. And so it worked out very well.
Ben Killam also said a couple factors he thinks plays into the high number of orphan cubs that he's taking in this year. One, a very high number killed during the hunt. And two, he said, hungry mother bears going in search of food and getting killed on the highway.
Normally, they wouldn't even cross. Interstates and even busy roads become barriers and define female home ranges. But on 89 this year, we had bears struck all the way down. We were picking up cubs in many of the different towns, Lebanon, New London, Grantham, it was just one after another. And so it's been a really tough year for bears.
Well, and real quick to you, Andy, you talked about how this time of year bears are all about the calories. It's striking to me to hear Ben Killam describe how their behaviors changed in that desperate search for calories.
Yeah. Glenn talked about the squirrels earlier on in the program. When food is more limited, animals have to travel further and wider to find food. So bears are the exact same way. They travel tremendous distances to find food resources. And when they're limited, when bears are traveling more, they're coming into contact with people more. They're coming into contact with busy roads more. So it absolutely sets up a mortality event.
So those moms in search of food, for their own caloric needs to nurse their young, and they end up getting killed on the highway.
Yeah.
And then there's orphaned cubs who end up coming to Ben Killam. And Ben told Jessica that all the cubs he's rescued this year, and he said he's had a record year, are quite small.
They're all between 10, well, probably 6 and 20 pounds, the ones that have come in. And the smallness reflects the fact that their mothers had run out of milk. If it were a normal year and the mothers were producing milk, we would have expected cubs 30 to 45 pounds if they were brought in. And these are small framed and low weight, and it reflects that mothers just did not have milk last year.
Again, that's Ben Killam, licensed bear rehabilitator for Fish and Game, founder of the Killam Bear Center in Lyme. What's the track record, Director Normando, for those bears once they are rehabilitated? Ben fattens them up, and eventually they get re-released, right? Then what happens?
That's a good question, and I don't personally know the answer to it. I don't know how many of them are actually tracked following release, but Andy may know.
Yeah, they get released in the spring. We've actually been actively releasing bears that we brought in last fall. We've let 16 go to date. They all get an ear tag, so if that bear is ever handled in the future, that tag allows us to track its origin. Right now, we don't have any of those animals radio collared, but in the past, we have done some research where we've put radio collars on those released rehabilitated bears, and what we've really found is that they're pretty much bears when they're released. They're very comparable to bears that have never come into a rehab facility. Their survival is good. We don't have an issue with them becoming conflict animals. So that's why we put the effort into the program, because we've really seen success with it.
Oh, that's interesting. It gets to what Chris has said earlier, that bears are smart. They do learn. So it sounds like once you release them, they learn how to be wild bears again. Go ahead, Director Normando.
And I would like to add that that our program here with Ben is unique. I mean, we're very concerned about what will happen in the future without Ben Killam if he retires or whatever, because, I mean, to be frank about it, most states do not have any sort of capacity to do what Ben Killam does. And so he is a big asset to us, and an asset to these bears also.
Well, we will hear a little bit later from Ben Killam about a famous bear in the Hanover area, but we won't talk about that quite yet. But yes, it's good to have his voice on the air. He was unable to join us today, so it was great that we got a chance to talk with him earlier this week. Let's go back to our listeners. Leanne is waiting in Jackson. Hi, Leanne. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. I was going back to the point what we had that you had about the bears getting cut and fed by the locals and everything. We
sure.
had a problem in Jackson a couple of years ago. We almost had a celebrity bear family. They actually called it the Jackson Five. It was a mother with four cubs.
Oh, my gosh.
And this bear broke into my house twice.
Oh, wow.
I had no food out. I had no feeders or garbage or anything like that. In fact, the second time it broke in, my husband and daughter were walking home from school as the cub was coming out of my bathroom window. And I'm just thankful that she didn't open the door and find the bear in the house. But this bear had been relocated once to the Canadian border, and within 3 days it was back in town. But it, like I said, it became a celebrity, and people were putting out food so they could get pictures of it. And it ended up the bear was baited and killed. And I think the cubs went to Ben Killam and were re-released. But I'm just, I wanted to go back to that point of a fed bear is a dead bear.
That's an amazing story, Leanne. If I could ask you a question or two, how did it get into your house? Were your doors not locked?
It came in through my bathroom window. I had a screen up, and it was off the porch, which is maybe 4 feet off the ground. The fish and game officer who came out, and she actually gave me one of those motion detector sirens for it. She thinks the mother may have actually boosted it up because it knew if it got in, it would get food.
Wow.
And it was teaching it that habit to get in.
And for a big, strong bear, a screen really isn't much of a problem.
No. She just pushed it in. There was actually a paw print in my toilet. She walked through my house, opened a bread box, and took out a loaf of bread and left with that.
That is an amazing story. So what's your message to everybody listening today, Leanne?
They're beautiful and they're wonderful animals, but stay away, let them be in their habitat. Don't feed them. Don't draw them to your house.
Even though go ahead.
I was going to say, it's great, but trust me, it's not fun to have them in your house.
No.
The bear actually had come one other time between the first and second break-in. My husband and I were sitting in the living room having coffee, and it came up. It crawls up the side of our house into our back deck, which is second story. And I knew it was the bear because I could read the number on the tag. It was that close.
This is an unbelievable story. I'm so glad you called in, Leanne. Chris, what do you think about this?
So, yeah, that was an interesting saga. And though that is a perfect example of why people should not purposefully feed bears. And purposeful feeding includes just ignoring our advice to take your bird feeders down April 1st and leave them down, and not having your garbage stored appropriately so bears can't get into it, letting your chickens roam, allowing bears access to food. You really, when you fail to do that, it's not just you that might be impacted by hungry, curious bears. It's your neighbors who are doing everything right. And this woman is a classic example of that.
Wow, Leanne, I'm so glad you called. And let's go to Dover, where Bill is on the line. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Thanks for calling The Exchange.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love this show. It's just such a great reminder, you know, that we're just one of the species on this planet. My biggest question is, are there any parts of New Hampshire where we don't need to worry about bears? And one other little question that I came up with while I was listening is, any research indicating that these swings in mast production and consequently the effect on bears has anything to do with climate?
Well, it's a great question and great questions. And Andy, let's take the first one. Is there any part of the state where you don't need to worry about bears?
No, there isn't. Because if you live, we have bears statewide. Granted, the densities are very different from the north compared to the south. But even if you live where there's low bear density, if you have attractants out, you're still going to have the ability to attract a bear. It's why we get a fair number of calls every year from towns like Merrimack, Manchester, some of those southern towns that really have overall very low bear density, but there's bears there, and if there's foods attractants, the likelihood of attracting a bear is still very high.
Yeah, well, and like I said,
so you can't let your guard down regardless of bear density.
There were a couple bears in our neighborhood just last year, and that was a first for me, living in Concord for a long time. What about his second question, Director Norman Doe? Do we know about the impact of climate change on these big mast years that we've been seeing? Lots and lots of acorns, and then all of a sudden, a crash.
I am not sure of that relationship. All I can say is that it's fairly normal to have these swings in mast crops. And in fact, some species of oak trees just don't only produce acorns every other year or whatever.
So there's a natural cycle to this.
So there's natural cycles to it. And, if there's one thing that can be said, it's that over the years, our forest makeup is different now than it was, 80 years ago, we didn't really have forest, right? The state was primarily a big field south of the White Mountains, and now we're one of the most forested states in the nation. So these things change over time, and most of us, the cycles are so long that most of us tend to not see it happening because it's stretched out over time.
Well, I appreciate the question, Bill. Thank you very much. And coming up, someone wants to know about laws that might be enforced in some communities concerning chicken coops, trash bins, bird feeders, and so forth. There's a couple communities in New Hampshire, from what I understand, that are laying down the law, so to speak, on that. So we'll talk about that in just a moment, and we'll keep taking your calls. Again, our number here in The Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. More on bears in the Granite State in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I'm Jason Moon, host of the Bear Brook podcast from NHPR. Join me for a live show now at City Space in Boston on May 14th. I'll speak about how we produced Bear Brook, the controversial science that helped crack open the case, and how that science is changing criminal investigations all across the country. Get your tickets now at wbur.org/cityspace. See you there.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, a downtown meeting place for books, greeting cards, games, toys, and coffee. Calendar of author book signings and events at gibsonsbookstore.com. And from New Hampshire Business Review, covering the companies and industries essential to New Hampshire and its economy. More at nhbr.com. Sunny today, we'll have high temperatures mid-50s to lower 60s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Exchange listeners, we'd like your help with a series on New Hampshire's labor shortage that will air the last week of May. What do you think would help create a more robust workforce in this state? Let us know. Go to nhpr.org/exchange to submit your stories or your thoughts, or you can just email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Back to our conversation now about how New Hampshire's bears are hungrier than usual this spring, also the high number of orphaned cubs, and the role that we humans play in all this. Let's get your questions in. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, right back to our listeners. Bill sent us an email from Henniker. He says, unfortunately, I think that there are many people who leave their bird feeders up specifically so they can see bears. Education, Bill says, isn't going to change this behavior. Are there any laws that can be enforced to deter people from leaving their feeders up? And Director Norman DeGaulle, I'm going to throw that to you.
So we actually do have the ability to ticket people who are feeding bears and those bears are causing problems in the neighborhood or whatever. We don't exercise it that much if we can help it. And every time we do, there ends up being stories in the paper about, us mean people at Fish and Game who are destroying, people's recreation because they will love to watch these animals. But we do have that authority. There have been several attempts over the years to make bear-proof dumpsters the law around the state, and those have never come to fruition. There are local ordinances in several towns that have required that, and those have been fairly successful. I believe Andy will agree with me in the towns where they are in place and enforced. So that's a good thing.
So you can get ticketed for directly feeding a bear, but just inadvertently leaving food out like a bird feeder, you can't get ticketed for that.
That's right. But normally, we have had situations where people are feeding bears and as many as 16 bears are coming into, somebody's feeding area.
Wow.
And the whole neighborhood is up in arms about this, and yet you can't, you can't get behavior to change.
Well, so that seems like a direct situation where you could ticket someone.
And we do.
I wonder, though, we have certain communities have seasonal parking bans. Some towns have rules where you can't park on the street from November to April or whatever. Could you impose a seasonal bird feeder ban, Director Normando? Deep sigh.
That is... I'm afraid, Audubon's a fairly good partner of ours. I really don't want to get a foul of that. But all of these types of issues have ancillary political considerations as well as other considerations. For example, dumpster companies really don't want to deploy locked dumpsters because it means their guy has to get out of the truck to unlock it to empty the dumpster rather than being able to pull in and just flip it over, and they point that out as being a safety issue for their drivers. So, there, as usual, every issue that seems like it's simple on the outside, as it gets into the discussion and different points of view come in, get more and more complicated.
So, Andy, from what I understand, a couple towns in New Hampshire have put these bear-proof dumpster ordinances in place. Littleton, I think, Bethlehem, how's it going?
Yes. So there's actually several towns now that have an ordinance. They include Lincoln, Gorham, Bethlehem, Franconia, and Littleton. Lincoln was the first, and is probably the example of where it's been most successful.
That's a big tourist town. Lots of condos there near Loon Mountain and so forth.
And it clearly has reduced conflict significantly. Littleton is the most recent town. Things are going very well there. The other towns have kind of abandoned the ordinance. Ordinances are great, but they only work if they're properly enforced. So in these towns where the local police department is enthusiastic about the ordinance and willing to enforce it, like Littleton and Lincoln, they're very successful. In towns where the PD is unwilling to enforce it, that's where they have not worked.
Sure.
But great tool, though.
And we've heard just recently how difficult it is to hire police officers these days. A lot of these agencies are short-staffed, and they've got addiction crisis on their hands and so forth. So they may say, yeah, I hear you, Andy, but right, I've got more than I can handle already. So I want to ask about chicken coops as well. And Diane emails from Springfield, please talk about how important it is for poultry keepers to utilize good containment, electric fencing, and food storage practices. And anybody can jump in on that. Maybe Chris, it seems like chicken coops have become more and more of a problem.
Yes, well, having chickens seems to be the in thing to do. Everyone has a little backyard flock. They're fun to watch. It's a great thing to have. But people, you know, these little chicks cost, what, $2 a piece to get? People don't realize that in order to protect them, they have to be confined. And not just from bears, but you have to protect them from weasels and Fisher and the local dog population and bobcats and all manner of wildlife love a nice chicken dinner. So we do recommend that when you get your chicks, you talk to the local fencing distributor, the local grain company, and say, what do I have to buy for fencing? Go on our website. We have wonderful information on how to properly fence your chickens and other livestock so that you don't have problems with wildlife. And electric fencing works wonderfully well.
Although people like to have free-range chickens in their backyard. I've got a friend who has some, and she says they keep the tick population down. So people like having those chickens run around.
Sure, let them run around. Just recognize they're going to lead short and exciting lives.
Oh, dear. Well, on the Fish and Game website, and I checked this out yesterday, you guys do seem kind of frustrated with chicken owners. Here's a quote. Most coops, pans, and runs are constructed to keep poultry in and typically fail at keeping wildlife out. Here's another quote. Wildlife are paying the price as an increasing number of landowners choose to kill wildlife as a means of defense against predation. Andy, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, that makes sense because those are my quotes. But it's the reality. And my thoughts on chickens are that if you want to have chickens free range, that's fine. But you got to, like Chris said, you got to expect you're going to lose some. If you're willing to shoot a bear to protect your chickens, then we'd really rather see you make the investment in electric fence. These electric fences, we set a lot of them up, we loan a lot of them out, and this equipment lasts a long time. So there's an initial cost, but that cost can be spread out over 10 plus years, which is what most of these chargers will last. But it's important, if you're adamant that your chickens live, it's really important that you protect an electric fence.
How did Director Normando, this food shortage that we've been talking about, affect the bear hunting season this year? Were there fewer bears out there? Were there more bears out there because they were looking for food? How did it affect the bear hunt this year?
We had a record bear take this year, over 1,000 animals. And a significant part of that is the fact that, as Andy had mentioned earlier, these animals are doing a lot more roaming, looking for food, and it just makes them more vulnerable to hunters.
And then, as somebody said earlier, they denned earlier too, right? There just wasn't enough food, Director Normando, so they kind of holed up and just checked out for the winter.
I believe that's true.
Yeah. Bears, you know, bears enter dens. You'd be surprised. I mean, on a year like last year with the poor food, females can start denning by late September, and we certainly saw that.
So it's not weather-related. It's more food-related.
It's food-related. So although we had a record harvest, that harvest essentially occurred in the month of September. Bears were not very active much past October.
Let's go back to our emails. Lots of sort of basic questions that people want answered in terms of encounters with bears. Lenore emails, we had a mother bear and two cubs in my neighborhood in Wolfboro a few weeks ago. I have an 8-year-old daughter who loves to play in the woods, behind our house, climbing trees, etc. What should I tell her to do if she were to encounter a mother with cubs? I read at Squam Lake Science Center that the thing to do is not to run, but to talk to the bear so you don't spook it as you gently back away. Is this true, Lenore asks, for a mother with cubs? Or what if the bears are between her and the house? Wow, great questions, Lenore. You first, Chris, but anybody else jump in. What should he tell her 8-year-old daughter about how to behave with a mother and cubs?
So they don't want to attack people. These aren't grizzly bears. Bears really are, black bears are, they're much more reluctant to interact with people. They will bluff charge people. But if you're out in the woods and there's a sow on one side of the trail and cubs on the other, or in your yard, and you get between them, just back away from, you know, from the middle. Just get out of there. The sow may bluff charge you, and she looks pretty intimidating when she does that.
Pretty scary.
Yeah, but what she's saying is, you are scaring me. Please get away.
So how do you respond to that bluff charge?
Just talk calmly and just keep moving away. Don't try and interact with her. Don't get mad. Look as big as you can and just back away.
Okay, so it sounds like Lenore is giving her daughter the right advice. Yep. Here's another question. Jerry from Laconia asks, what should a hiker do if they encounter a bear, with or without cubs? And Jerry asks us a great question. Will a bear associate food with a hiker or smell food a hiker may be carrying? I never thought about that, Jerry. What a good question, Andy.
Yeah, it's our advice there is,
you got to carry food when you hike.
You do. So most of the advice is similar to what Chris just said. If a hiker's hiking down a trail and sees a bear at a distance, can do one or two things. You can just detour and go another way, or what I would do is just make normal noise, let the bear know you're there, and the bear will move off. We have had a couple situations in the past where there's been some bears on some of these popular hiking trails that have learned to follow people and beg, and people quickly panic and start tossing them food in order to try to deter them. Those bears aren't being aggressive. Those bears have learned that they can capitalize on people's fear. Those bears, if a bear's doing that, that's when you turn and kind of face the bear and try to dominate it. Usually if you turn and just, elevate your voice a little bit and say, no bear, that's usually enough to deter it. But, bears learn how to do that.
That seems to be the theme today.
Yeah.
Bears learn
very
easily.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Glenn.
So the woman from Jackson was talking about the sow with the cubs and how it may have pushed, one of the cubs up through. And that's one of the problems with these bears if they become a housebreaker or whatever is, those sows will teach those cubs these bad behaviors.
Oh,
and
my
it
goodness,
gets carried
I see.
On. You know, it's not a once they learn, they don't forget, and that becomes problematic. We had a bear in Conway that figured out that people leave lunches in their cars, and over the course of, a season or two, broke into over 50 vehicles.
Don't people lock their vehicles?
Well, it learned to check.
Wow.
And, of course, clawing around your car to see if the doors will open is probably not good for your paint job. And, so these bears aren't stupid.
Well, we'll have to have you back because I have a lot more questions that we won't have time to go through. But here's one. Neil from Berlin suggests a dog as a good bear repellent. His Staffordshire Terrier scares off the bears that he regularly sees in his backyard. So thank you, Neil, for that. Gary in Sugar Hill suggests the state place signs in the notch warning tourists not to approach or feed the wildlife. So instead of an ordinance, which you described some of the complexities there, Director Normando, he suggests some new signage in addition to the break for moose signs that you see there. Gigi sent us an email. What can we do for the bears? She says, we took their habitat. What can we do about creating places where they can find food and live a safe life? I love that question, Gigi. And go ahead, Andy, you first, but anybody else too.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who owns property can do habitat improvement to create habitat for bears. But for
what
most,
does that mean?
You know, you could manage your timber to encourage mass-producing shrubs and tree species. You could maintain, you know, green fields are hugely important to bears right now. That's where the green vegetation is growing. You could maintain fields.
So plant trees that drop acorns.
Yeah, you could do things like that. But for most people, really all you need to do is leave them be.
And bring in the bird
feeder. Leave them be. Control your food attractants around your house so that you don't pull them in and just let them be bears.
What do you think, Director Normando?
I agree with Andy. You know, the fact is we have an extraordinarily healthy bear population. And, you know, they just need to be left to be bears. And if people are willing to help us do that, we will have a lot fewer negative interactions with them.
Chris?
Yeah, I really think we are so blessed to be a state that still has enough wild lands that we have a healthy bear population. And they would do fine if people would just learn to be more responsible. We're growing so quickly. If we want to share our world with wildlife, it is incumbent on us to learn to be very responsible for our own garbage, our bird feeders, the animals we choose to raise. So as long as we do that, we can live with wildlife. But if we refuse to do that, wildlife will pay the price.
As you all said earlier, a fed bear is a dead bear. Gigi, thank you for the question. One last quick question for you, Director Normando. Given the increase in the bear population, you said earlier, I think 5,800 bears, how much has the number of complaints from the public changed? Have they gone up given the increasing numbers? Have they stayed the same?
Andy's probably the best person to answer this, but they tend to vary greatly depending on food availability. So when food availability is low, bear problems increase. When it's high in the woods and they tend to stay in the woods, bear problems decrease.
Sure. What have we seen this year, Andy?
Yeah.
So far, it's still early
in
terms of the bears.
Yeah, I'll just say quick, you know, we've actually stabilized complaints, and that's because of the hard work we're doing. But we have about the same number of complaints a year now that we had in the 90s, but we have twice as many bear now.
Wow.
And our human population now is considerably higher. So there's the success. But highly variable from year to year, but we by and large have stabilized complaints. We get these high spikes once in a while, but relatively stable.
Well, it was great to talk to all of you. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.